This is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman with Howard Wilkinson. Ohio Supreme Court Chief Justice Maureen O'Connor is continuing her statewide conversations about judicial election reform. She was in Claremont County last month and spoke to the County Chamber of Commerce on the issue. O'Connor said polling suggests people like their local judges, but they think there are problems with the legal system. She has an 8-point plan or series of questions for reforming judicial elections. Chief Justice O'Connor joins us from Columbus to discuss her ideas. You can join the conversation. Our phone number is 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter, 513-419-7100. And Chief Justice O'Connor, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for the invitation.
We just spent about 25 minutes talking about the state address that's coming up on Monday night. I was thought to start, could you give us just a quick state of the judiciary in Ohio?
The state of the judiciary is strong. We have judges that are working every day, I think, to accomplish what they're expected to do, what their sworn obligation is, and that's to administer justice. I think that one of the problems that we have in this state with regards to the judicial branch is a lack of understanding oftentimes in what a judge does, how a judge does it, and the constraints that are on a judge. And I say that because I believe that many people, if they've not had an experience with a member of the judiciary, in other words, they haven't had to go to court for any reason, they get most of their knowledge filtered either through the media, which sometimes, no offense, doesn't do justice to the role of a judge. Or they get it from the entertainment industry. They get it through, the afternoon ridiculous judge shows, which I think should be banned. And then they also get it through how judges and lawyers in the legal system are portrayed in the evening dramas and in movies. And we all know that that is inaccurate. So, part of this plan that I would love to, get into the details on is to educate the public about what judges do and about the credentials of those who are running to be elected to the judiciary. And that is a major component of this plan.
This plan, was there one thing that triggered your decision to go around the state and have conversations about it? Was there one item that caused you to bring this plan forward?
Well, the troubling fact that, I came to realize is that people do not really elect their judges based on a knowledge of the judicial candidate. And you just spent a half hour talking about the governor's state of the state, and people will go to the polls and they will elect the governor and the president and other partisan office holders with a pretty good idea, at least of about probably 3, 4, or 5 things that they either like or dislike about the candidate. And that's not what happens when it comes to the judiciary. People want to elect their judiciary in Ohio. They want to be able to do so on every level. And yet when you ask them why they voted for a particular candidate, they cannot tell you why other than maybe I recognized the name. And then you couple that lack of understanding with polling that has been done that states that in a very troubling way that oftentimes people who were polled said that they believe that politics or political donations or political affiliations or the status of the parties that come before the judge, the court, make a difference in how a judge makes a decision. To me, that is very, very troubling.
You have 8 points, and we will try our best in our time here to talk about all 8. If we miss some, there will be a link on our website, wvxu.org, where you can read more about each of the 8 points. But the first one, and I think this was one of the first things you talked about when you were in Claremont County last month, should Ohio change the law so judicial races are no longer listed at the end of the ballot? And I think I was there, and I think I remember you had a rather striking statistic of the actual number of people who voted. But then there was a sharp contrast about the people who cast votes for judges that were on those ballots.
You know, absolutely. In any given election where an election of a judiciary is on the ballot, there's going to be at least a 25% drop-off. In other words, 25% of the people who take that ballot and turn that ballot in do not go to the end to vote for a judge. And then, you know, the statistics from 2012 in Cuyahoga County suggested that 40% of those that cast a ballot in that election of 2012 did not vote for their judiciary. And in 2012, we had Supreme Court, Appellate Court, and Common Pleas Court judges on the ballot in those counties. So it's a little disconcerting. So, you know, the ballot order matters, you know, and especially when we have these longer and longer ballots. And the concept here is let's not always have judges at the end of the ballot where they are now. Let's rotate them in. Sometimes they're first, sometimes, you know, and everybody gets a turn at being at the top of the ticket and down ticket. And that, I would hope, would make a difference. But I also have the second point, which would be that should judicial elections be held an odd number of years? And I think that's an extremely important talking point, because I think that what happens to members of the judiciary and candidates for the judiciary when they're running, because they are such low profile races, that they get lost with the, you know, in the hubbub of the presidential election, the gubernatorial election, Senate, Congress, legislative, etc. I always say that those partisan candidates are shouting their messages, and the judges are relegated to the corner, and they can only whisper a message because they don't have the resources to bring, you know, the election, the judicial election, to the forefront. And, you know, the media covers the much more active, I would think, and maybe more controversial candidates. So judges, again, are relegated to the back seat. So let's take judges out of the competition in the even years and put them in the odd years where we don't have the president, the governor, the senator, and all the other partisan elected officials running. And maybe that'll help to showcase the judges. And we would couple that with the third idea here, which is voter education. So if we can move the judges' elections to the odd years, and we can put forth a centralized, expanded guide on civic education and the judicial voter guide, I think we are going a long way to informing the voter to make an informed decision, helping them to make a decision when they vote for the judiciary. You know, here's another interesting fact, which I would venture to say that many of your listeners don't know, that the vast majority of judicial elections in this state are unopposed. In 2013, there were 77 judges on the ballot in Ohio, and 60 of those seats were unopposed. In other words, there was only one person running. That was, chances are, that was the incumbent, and they were elected automatically.
Yes, and in Hamilton County last fall, every single municipal court judgeship was one candidate on the ballot.
Unopposed, yes. And I'm not, you know, I'm not decrying that. I'm not saying that, you know, everybody should have an opponent by any means. That's not what the, you know, the focus or the thrust of this is. But it's in some ways ironic that the voters continue to want to elect their judges, and yet 60 out of 77 judges, they didn't truly have a choice. And maybe if the voters knew that they're really not electing a judge between two candidates, that would change their mind on whether or not they really want to have an elected system of the judiciary.
There was a point in your number three point there about the civic education programming, and I cut the line in here. I'm not sure it directly relates, but I think, haven't you also been a proponent that it would help the judiciary if there were cameras available in the federal courts, much like there are in the state courts?
Absolutely. I'm a big proponent of having cameras in the federal court, and especially in the United States Supreme Court. And there have been numerous op-ed pieces that have been authored and contained in newspapers from Washington to the West Coast about this very topic. And I think it's important. I think it would help the public to understand what goes on in the third branch of government, the judicial branch of government. I have to say that all across the country, the Supreme Courts are on line and available for review by the public, but not all trial courts and certainly not all appellate or intermediate courts are. But I just read the other day where South Euclid Municipal Court is going online so that all of their hearings and trials before the judge in South Euclid, Ohio, will be available for the public to view. And, you know, the judge was asked, was this an expensive thing to do? And it was the purchase of a camera that hooked up to a laptop. And I think the cost was under $300 to do it. And that will allow the people of South Euclid to see their elected judge in operation. And, you know, if we could do more of that across this country and across this state, I think people would really have a better understanding about the judiciary.
So it might be fair to say you think it would be better if people could see real Supreme Court cases as opposed to watching Judge Judy in the afternoon.
You know, I'm not a fan of censorship, but if I had my druthers, I think I'd take those afternoon judge shows off the air. And I'm just joking, of course, but they do such a disservice to our legal system and to the people's perception. And I have to tell you, if a judge acted the way Judge Judy did, does, as negative and nasty and degrading and demeaning to the people that come before her, I guarantee there would be discipline filed against that judge, discipline charges. She would not be on the bench very long.
One of the fourth point that you raise, should Ohio eliminate party affiliation in a ballot in judicial primaries? How would you envision that? Would it just be a field race with a runoff in the fall?
Yes, that's pretty much how you would look at it, that there would be the top two vote-getters in the primary would face off in November, and it would not matter if they personally were registered, the same party or different parties. Mm-hmm. And then the voters, you know, would make a decision in the fall. And one of the reasons I think that this is an important thing to do is that if we had a field primary, then everybody could vote in that primary. Right now, a primary, you're only voting if you're a registered Republican or a registered Democrat in your respective primary. And the people that actually make the decision about who is going to be the judge between the two primary candidates are actually the independent voters, the voters who are not registered, who didn't participate in the primaries, because there's more of those voters out there than there are registered Democrats and registered Republicans. And this proposal about eliminating party affiliation would allow for everybody to participate, all voters, regardless of your party affiliation, in a primary, and then do so in the general election as well.
So no matter what party ballot you would ask for at a primary election, you would have the judicial races there.
That could work that way, or there'd be a separate judicial ballot that you were given.
Yeah.
But yes, absolutely. You'd get your ballot, and if there were Democratic primaries, for example, for other offices, you would then have the field to choose from, and there would be no party denomination on that.
Your fifth point, you point out that more than half of all the judges in Ohio don't get to the bench through an election, but instead are appointed by the governor to fill a vacancy. And you ask, should Ohio join other states to have a formal nonpartisan system for recommending nominees for the governor to fill those vacancies? How do you envision that working?
Well, it would be a formal system that would be fashioned after, systems that have been advocated by the American Bar Association. For example, Cuyahoga County now has a very successful local program that does this. And what they have is a bipartisan group that comes together. Individuals who want to be chosen to be governor or to be a judge by the governor would come before that group. They would then rank the candidates either qualified or not qualified for the position, and names would then be given to the governor to make that choice. The governor. And here's the beauty of the Cuyahoga County system is that both political party chairmen have agreed to abide by the screening process. In other words, the Republican chair will not proffer names to the governor of any candidates that have not been deemed qualified by this review commission. And the Democratic chair has vowed to do the same. They did that in the Strickland administration, and they do it in the Kasich administration.
Your number 6 point, should appointments to the Ohio Supreme Court require the advice and consent of the Ohio Senate? Now, I'm assuming since we elect Supreme Court justices, that would be if there was a vacancy for some reason, correct?
Yes, yes. If a justice would be no longer able to serve, resign voluntarily, for whatever reason there was a vacancy, this would allow the Senate then to weigh in on the selection process. And, constitutionally, the selection obviously resides with the governor. But this would be an advice and consent of the Senate. And, the argument counter to this is, well, we don't want to be bogged down like the United States Senate gets bogged down in the advising consent to the president on judicial appointments. My response to that has always been, well, shame on us if we can't do a better job than how they do things in Washington. And I think that we can. We could, set some windows of activity here. When the decision, the recommendation had to be made, the presumption would be that the candidate proffered by the governor for appointment is a qualified candidate, and the Senate would affirm that, barring any information to the contrary.
Does that put that appointee, though, maybe under a little bit more of a microscope than if they were to just run to be on the Ohio Supreme Court as a candidate?
Yes, but we're talking in terms of an opening midterm where there's no election. The Constitution says the governor has to appoint in the event of a vacancy.
Your seventh point, should Ohio increase the basic qualifications for serving as a judge? And this was something I think when you spoke in Claremont County, you talked quite a bit about those basic qualifications.
Well, the basic qualification right now is you have to be an attorney for 6 years. You have to have been practicing for 6 years, and then you can be Chief Justice of the Ohio Supreme Court. And I think if you talk to any attorney, there's very few that would agree that at 6 years of practice that someone would be qualified to sit on the Supreme Court. Or some would argue other courts as well. So I think that by requiring more legal experience, it would enhance the public's confidence in the bench.
Yeah, would that include experience on the bench, lower courts?
Well, it would be in order to be a judge. So we would increase the number of years. It could be, related to the office that you seek. If you want to run for municipal judge, maybe, 8 years would be good. If you want to run for a common pleas court judge, 10 years, maybe 12 for the appellate court, maybe 15 for the Supreme Court, or a variable. I'm not saying that those numbers are written in stone, but I'm just saying that something in excess of 6 years and you can run for or be appointed to any judicial office.
And your final point, should Ohio increase the length of judges' terms?
And that really goes to the idea that you're trying to depoliticize the process of judicial elections. When you run for judicial office, you've got to do some things that all political candidates have to do. You have to campaign. You have to convince people as to why they should vote for you. You have to raise money to help get your message out. And people find that distasteful for judges to have to do, and yet they want to continue to elect their judges. So in order to minimize the number of times that a judge has to put on their political hat and campaign, if we stretched out the number of years for each term, they would lessen the amount of times that they go to the public and, as I said, put on their political hat.
And I think as a general rule right now, judges' terms are 6 years?
Yes, that's mm-hmm. always, that's all judges are 6 years. We run for election every 6 years.
And if I'm glancing through this, you would have different years of, in office based on the level of the judgeship, correct?
And that could be, yes. And I'm, you know, again, these are points for conversation. And, you know, we would hopefully, if the the idea is that we would examine this and how would we do this, then the consensus would be, you know, would decide what the number of years would be appropriate for each judgeship.
And all of these ideas would require constitutional amendments?
No, not all of them. Some are, mm-hmm. are statutory.
Okay.
Some are statutory.
So now that you've been going around the state to have these conversations, I guess how long do the conversations continue, and what do you do at the end of that process?
Well, at the end, we're going to identify maybe rank the ideas and some of the suggestions that we've been having. Some ideas, I think, clearly are not going to fly. I think that extending the number of years in a judicial term, I have gotten some pretty strong evidence that nobody's particularly interested in doing that, least of all the legislature. So, you know, I'm a realist when it comes to what things will be successful and what not. So I think that we will identify, I'm hoping, 3, maybe 4 things out of this group of ideas that will, you know, go on to be constitutional amendments, you know, that will be put before the voters so that they can weigh in, or they could be statutory changes that would be something the legislature would deem appropriate.
And in just about 20 or 30 seconds before we run out of time, I think you were clear when you spoke to the Claremont County Chamber, you don't envision any of these leading to where Ohioans would not be able to elect their judges, because I think they've spoken on that in the past, and that seems like that Ohio is going to continue to elect judges.
I believe that the voters of Ohio want to continue to elect their judges. I have no doubt about that based on the many polls and the 2 ballot issues that were both in 1937 and then 1987, 50 years apart. And believe it or not, the numbers were almost identical. Overwhelmingly, people want to continue to elect their judges.
Ohio Supreme Court Chief Justice Maureen O'Connor talking about her 8-point plan or series of questions for reforming judicial elections in Ohio. You'll find a link to additional information about those points at WVXU.org. Chief Justice O'Connor, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available on our website. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. Our technical director was Bruce Ellis. With Howard Wilkinson, I'm Jay Hanselman.